Chapter 2. There was abundance of vast classes full of the works of this wonderful philosopher. He gave the how, the modus of all the secret operations of nature, and told us how sensation is conveyed to and from the brain, why respiration preserves life, and how locomotion is directed to, as well as performed by the parts. There are some anatomical dissections of thought, and a mathematical description of nature's strong box, the memory, with all its locks and keys. There you have that part of the head turned inside outward, in which nature has placed the materials of reflecting, and like a glass beehive, represents to you all the several cells in which are lodged things past, even back to infancy and conception. There you have the repository, with all its cells, classically, annually, numerically, and alphabetically disposed. There you may see how, when the perplexed animal, on the loss of a thought or word, scratches his poll, every attack of his invading fingers knocks at nature's door, alarms all the register keepers, and away they run, unlock all the classes, search diligently for what he calls for, and immediately deliver it up to the brain. If it cannot be found, they entreat a little patience, till they step into the revolvery, where they run over little catalogues of the minutest passages of life, and so in time never fail to hand on the thing, if not just when he calls for it, yet at some other time. And thus, when a thing lies very abstruse, and all the rummaging of the whole house cannot find it, nay, when all the people in the house have given it over, they very often find one thing, when they are looking for another. Next you have the retentive in the remotest part of the plus, which, like the records in the tower, takes possession of all matters, as they are removed from the classes in the repository, for want of room. These are carefully locked, and kept safe, never to be opened, but upon solemn occasions, and have swinging great bars and bolts upon them, so that what is kept here, is seldom lost. Here conscience has one large warehouse, and the devil another. The first is very seldom opened, but as a chinker till, where all the follies and crimes of life being minute are dropped in. But as the man seldom cares to look in, the locks are very rusty, and not opened, but with great difficulty, and on extraordinary occasions, as sickness, afflictions, jails, casualties, and death. And then the bars all give way at once, and being pressed from within with a more than ordinary weight, burst as a cask of wine upon the fret, which for want of vent, makes all the hoops fly. As for the devil's warehouse, he has two constant warehouse keepers, pride and conceit, and these are always at the door, showing their wares, and exposing the pretended virtues and accomplishments of the man, by way of ostentation. In the middle of this curious part of nature, there is a clear thoroughfare, representing the world, through which so many thousand people pass so easily, and do so little worth taking notice of, that 'tis for no manner of signification, to leave word they have been here. Throw this opening past millions of things not worth remembering, and which the register keepers, who stand at the doors of the classes, as they go by, take no notice of. Such as friendships, helps in distress, kindnesses in affliction, voluntary services, and all sorts of importunate merit, things which being but trifles in their own nature, are made to be forgotten. In another angle, is to be seen the memory's garden, in which her most pleasant things are not only deposited, but planted, transplanted, grafted, inoculated, and obtain all possible propagation and increase. These are the most pleasant, delightful, and agreeable things, call it envy, slander, revenge, strife, and malice, with the additions of ill turns, reproaches, and all manner of wrong. These are caressed in the cabinet of the memory, with a world of pleasure never let pass, and carefully cultivated with all imaginable art. There are multitudes of weeds, toys, chat, story, fiction, and lying, which in the great throng of passant affairs, stop by the way, and crowding up the plus, leave no room for their betters that come behind, which makes many a good guest be put by, and left to go clear throw for want of entertainment. There are a multitude of things very curious and observable, concerning this little, but very accurate thing, called memory. But above all, I see nothing so very curious, as the wonderful art of willful forgetfulness. And as 'tis a thing, indeed, I never could find any person completely master of, it pleased me very much, to find this author has made a large essay, to prove there is really no such power in nature, and that the pretenders to it are all impostors, and put a banter upon the world, for that it is impossible for any man, to oblige himself to forget a thing, since he that can remember to forget, and at the same time forget to remember, has an art above the devil. In his laboratory you see a fancy preserved a la mummy, several thousand years old, by examining which you may perfectly discern, how nature makes a poet. Another you have taken from a mere natural, which discovers the reasons of nature's negative in the case of humane understanding, what deprivation of parts she suffers, in the composition of a coxcomb, and with what wonderful art she prepares a man to be a fool. Here being the product of this author's wonderful skill, you have the skeleton of a wit, with all the readings of philosophy and chirurgery upon the parts. Here you see all the lines nature has drawn to form a genius, how it performs, and from what principles. Also you are instructed to know the true reason of the affinity between poetry and poverty, and that it is equally derived from what's natural and intrinsic, as from accident and circumstance. How the world being always full of fools and knaves, wit is sure to miss of a good market, especially, if wit and truth happen to come in company, for the fools don't understand it, and the knaves can't bear it. But still 'tis owned, and is most apparent, there is something also natural in the case too, since there are some particular vessels nature thinks necessary, to the more exact composition of this nice thing called a wit, which as they are, or are not interrupted in the peculiar offices for which they are appointed, are subject to various distempers, and more particularly to effluxions and vapor, deliriums, giddiness of the brain, and lapsa, or looseness of the tongue. And as these distempers, occasioned by the exceeding quantity of volatiles, nature is obliged to make use of in the composition, are hardly to be avoided. The disasters which generally they push the animal into, are as necessarily consequent to them as night is to the setting of the sun. And these are very many, as disobliging parents, who have frequently in this country whipped their sons for making verses. And here I could not, but reflect how useful a disciplinary correction must be to a poet, and how easy the town had been at NTEWTBPSDSDFI, and 100 more of the jingling train of our modern rhymers, been whipped young, very young, for pedesting, they had never perhaps sucked in that venom of ribaldry, which all the satyr of the age has never been able to scourge out of them to this day. The further fatal consequences of these unhappy defects in nature, where she has damned a man to wit and rhyme, has been loss of inheritance, parents being aggravated by the obstinate young beaux, resolving to be wits in spite of nature, the wiser head has been obliged to confederate with nature, and withhold the birthright of brains, which otherwise the young gentleman might have enjoyed, to the great support of his family and posterity. Thus the famous Waller, Denham, Dryden, and sundry others, were obligated to condemn their race to lunacy and blockheadism, only to prevent the fatal destruction of their families, and entailing the plague of wit and weathercocks upon their posterity. The yet farther extravagancies which naturally attend the mischief of wit, are boism, dogmaticality, whimsification, impudency, and various kinds of foppiosities, according to Mr. Boyle. which issuing out of the brain, descend into all the faculties, and branch themselves by infinite variety, into all the actions of life. These by consequence, beggar the head, the tail, the purse, and the whole man, till he becomes as poor and despicable as negative nature can leave him, abandoned of his sense, his manners, his modesty, and what's worse, his money, having nothing left but his poetry, dies in a ditch, or a garret, a Lamode de Tom Brown, uttering rhymes and nonsense to the last moment. In pity to all my unhappy brethren, who suffer under these inconveniences, I cannot but leave it on record, that they may not be reproached with being agents of their own misfortunes, since I assure them, nature has formed them with the very necessity of acting like coxcombs, fixed upon them by the force of organic consequences, and placed down at the very original effusion of that fatal thing called wit. Nor is the discovery less wonderful than edifying, and no humane art on our side the world ever found out such a sympathetic influence, between the extremes of wit and folly, till this great Linnaean naturalist furnished us with such unheard of demonstrations. Nor is this all I learnt from him, though I cannot part with this, till I have published a memento mori, and told him what I had discovered of nature in these remote parts of the world, from whence I take the freedom to tell these gentlemen, that if they please to travel to these distant parts, and examine this great master of nature's secrets, they may every man see what cross strokes nature has struck, to finish and form every extravagant species of that heterogeneous kind we call wit. There C.S. may be informed, how he comes to be very witty, and a madman all at once, and P.R. may see, that with less brains and more P.X. he is more a wit, and more a madman than the coal. Adson may tell his master my lord the reason from nature, why he would not take the court's word, nor write the poem called, The Campaign, till he had 200 L per annum secured to him. Since 'tis known they have but one author in the nation, that writes for 'em for nothing, and he is laboring very hard to obtain the title of blockhead, and not be paid for it. Here D might understand, how he came to be able to banter all mankind, and yet all mankind be able to banter him. At the same time our numerous throng of Parnassians may see reasons for the variety of the negative and positive blessings they enjoy. Some for having wit and no verse, some verse and no wit, some mirth without jest, some jest without forecast, some rhyme and no jingle, some all jingle and no rhyme, some language without measure, some all quantity and no cadence, some all wit and no sense, some all sense and no flame, some preach in rhyme, some sing when they preach, some all song and no tune, some all tune and no song. All these unaccountables have their originals, and can be answered for in unerring nature, though in our outside guesses we can say little to it. Here is to be seen, why some are all nature, some all art. Some beat verse out of the 24 rough letters, with 10 hammers and anvils to every line, and maul the language as a Swede beats stockfish. Others buff nature, and bully her out of whole stanzas of ready-made lines at a time. Carry all before them, and rumble like distant thunder in a black cloud. Thus degrees and capacities are fitted by nature according to organic efficacy, and the reason and nature of things are found in themselves. Had D.Y. seen his own draft by this light of Chinese knowledge, he might have known he should be a coxcomb without writing 22 plays, to stand as so many records against him. Dryden might have told his fate, that having his extraordinary genius flung and pitched upon a swivel, it would certainly turn round as fast as the times, and instruct him how to write elegies, to O.C. and King C. II, with all the coherence imaginable, how to write Religio Lacy, and The Hind and Panther, and yet be the same man, every day to change his principle, change his religion, change his coat, change his master, and yet never change his nature. There are abundance of other secrets in nature discovered in relation to these things, too many to repeat, and yet too useful to omit, as the reason why physicians are generally atheists, and why atheists are universally fools, and generally live to know it themselves, the real obstructions, which prevent fools being mad, all the natural causes of love, abundance of demonstrations of the synonymous nature of love and lechery, especially considered a la modern, with an absolute specific for the frenzy of love, found out in the Constitution, Anglis, a halter. It would be endless to reckon up the numerous improvements and wonderful discoveries this extraordinary person has brought down, and which are to be seen in his curious chamber of rarities. Particularly, a map of Parnassus, with an exact delineation of all the cells, apartments, palaces, and dungeons, of that most famous mountain, with a description of its height, and a learned dissertation, proving it to be the properest plus next to the P.E. house, to take a rise at, for a flight to the world in the moon. Also some enquiries, whether Noah's Ark did not first rest upon it, and this might be one of the summits of Ararat, with some confutations of the gross and palpable errors, which place this extraordinary skill among the mountains of the moon in Africa. Also you have here a muse calcinid, a little of the powder of which given to a woman big with child, if it be a boy it will be a poet, if a girl she'll be a whore, if an hermaphrodite it will be lunatic. Strange things, they tell us, have been done with this calcinid womb of imagination. If the body it came from was a lyric poet, the child will be a beau, or a beauty, if an heroic poet, he will be a bully. If his talent was satyr, he'll be a philosopher. Another muse they tell us, they have dissolved into a liquid, and kept with wondrous art, the virtues of which are sovereign against idiotism, dullness, and all sorts of lethargic diseases. But if given into great a quantity, creates peace, poverty, lunacy, and the devil in the head ever after. I confess, I always thought these muses strange intoxicating things, and have heard much talk of their original, but never was acquainted with their virtue a la simple before. However, I would always advise people against too large a dose of wit, and think the physician must be a madman that will venture to prescribe it. As all these noble acquirements came down with this wonderful man from the world in the moon, it furnished me with these useful observations. 1. That country must needs be a plus of strange perfection, in all parts of extraordinary knowledge. 2. How useful a thing it would be for most sorts of our people, especially statesmen, PT men, convocation men, philosophers, physicians, quacks, mountebanks, stock jobbers, and all the mob of the nation's civil or ecclesiastical bone setters, together with some men of the law, some of the sword, and all of the pen. I say, how useful and improving a thing it must be to them, to take a journey up to the world in the moon, but above all, how much more beneficial it would be to them that stayed behind. 3. That it is not to be wondered at, why the Chinese excel so much all these parts of the world, since but for that knowledge which comes down to them from the world in the moon, they would be like other people. 4. No man need to wonder at my exceeding desire to go up to the world in the moon, having heard of such extraordinary knowledge to be obtained there, since in the search of knowledge and truth, wiser men than I have taken as unwarrantable flights, and gone a great deal higher than the moon, into a strange abyss of dark phenomena, which they neither could make other people understand, nor ever rightly understood themselves, witness Malbranche, Mr. Locke, Hobbes, the Honorable Boyle and a great many others, besides Messrs. Norris, Asgill, Coward, and the Tale of a Tub. This great searcher into nature has, besides all this, left wonderful discoveries and experiments behind him, but I was with nothing more exceedingly diverted than with his various engines and curious contrivances to go to and from his own native country, the moon. All are mechanic motions of Bishop Wilkins, or the artificial wings of the learned Spaniard, who could have taught God Almighty how to have mended the creation, are fools to this gentleman, and because no Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.